This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is part of our episode, Leap of Space. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. A lot of us are excited about the possibility of humans living on distant planets, but some think it's crucial to the survival of our species. Like SpaceX founder and futurist Elon Musk, he predicts that there'll be some kind of doomsday event on Earth, so that means we have to find other places to live. But if you want to send people and all of their stuff beyond our solar system, then you have to solve what seems perhaps like a mundane problem, fuel. Alan Yu is here now to talk more. Hey, Alan.
Hi, Maiken. So the problem is that if right now we use rockets to get to space, but that means carrying a lot of fuel with you. And if you want to go further in the solar system, that means you have to stop to refuel. Otherwise, you'll be carrying a lot of extra weight. Now, you could use nuclear fuel, and that's what the New Horizons probe that got to Pluto used, but then you won't have a lot of power left over on your spaceship. Now, Star Wars got around this problem by creating a hyperdrive.
Both trap yourselves in. I'm going to make a jump to light speed.
But light speed is not possible, right?
No, we can't do that right now. So on the slightly more plausible side, Star Trek created warp drives.
Maximum warp. Punch it.
Whoa, that sounded like a lot of explosions. How does a warp drive work?
Right, so basically that requires using antimatter to make a giant explosion, and we can't make enough antimatter right now for that kind of a boom. Now, the sci-fi show The Expanse has a relatively practical solution. A recent episode had a character called Solomon Epstein explaining how his nuclear fusion drive changed everything for mankind.
Because with my drive, the Epstein drive, Mars would be able to move outward, mine the asteroids, colonize the belt, and remake the solar system. My drive would give us the edge we needed to finally break free from Earth and build a new world for ourselves.
So you need some dramatic music and also a fusion drive. How does fusion power work again?
Right, so what we have in nuclear power plants right now is nuclear fission, and that's when you split atoms to release energy. Nuclear fusion is what powers the sun. You stick charged particles together, and that releases a lot of energy. Now, that is something scientists actually are working on. I went to the Princeton Plasma Physics Lab in New Jersey to see this in action.
So you need your IDs, whatever you brought.
They have a nuclear fusion drive. Well, a very, very early version of one called the direct fusion drive. Stephanie Thomas is an aerospace engineer at the private company Princeton Satellite Systems. She's working on a spaceship that would use this drive to get to Pluto. And that's a partnership between her company and the Princeton Plasma Physics Lab. She started on that proposal in 2015.
And New Horizons had just reached Pluto, and it flew by Pluto, you know, it said hi Pluto, bye Pluto, at 14 kilometers per second, and it has the power of about 2 light bulbs on board, and each picture takes 2 days.
So again, that's very little power left inside New Horizons. NASA recently awarded Stephanie's fusion project close to $1 million because it could be a lot more productive than the fuel they used for the New Horizons mission to Pluto.
It's like HDTV data rates back or better, you know, because we have so much power available. And the reason all these communications is limited is because of power. So, you know, if we can put, you know, 100 kilowatts into our laser beaming back our data, we can just produce huge amounts of data. And now your science mission is just returning so much more information.
Right now, the fusion drive her team is building isn't much to look at, and it's hard to even know what to focus on. There's a clear cylinder in the middle, about as long as a desk, with a glowing purple light, multiple bundles of wires dangling from the ceiling, and a large chunk of pink foam. The drive works in 3 steps. Pass electricity through a gas, which creates plasma, a charged gas. Heat the plasma with radio waves, which works a bit like a microwave oven. Pump in another gas, that gas gets really hot and shoots out the end, so it's like you have a jet engine. I'm not saying you should do this, but if you take that thing outside the room and point it somewhere, would it shoot up?
Yes, if we took it in outer space, yes, definitely there's some thrust.
But physicist Samuel Cohen also says right now it's nothing compared to the rockets we use to send Apollo astronauts to the moon.
Liftoff! We have liftoff!
Those are called Saturn rockets.
The Saturn rocket, though, uses up all its propellant in about 8 minutes. Our rocket would continue to provide thrust for a year, 2 years, 10 years, and so eventually we get up to speeds much greater than the Saturn can get up to.
And it's not just about space. This fusion drive could be a clean power source on Earth. It produces far less radioactive material compared to existing reactors and other ideas for nuclear fusion. Michael Polushek of Princeton Satellite Systems explains.
To a power company, it's really the ideal power source. You bring it in, it's fully fueled, you run it for 30 years, and if you need 10 more megawatts, you just order another one, it's delivered by truck, and there you go.
The machine they have now is made mostly of old equipment, some of which is 30 years old, which means it was cheap. Now they're working on a newer version to get closer to producing fusion power, while solving some technical problems. They had one the day I went there. Here's Sam Cohen, the physicist.
We think a $3 object is broken inside a cabinet, so we're trying to find a replacement for this $3 object.
The company that makes this $3 object went out of business, but they fixed the problem the next day. All of this may sound like Back to the Future meets MacGyver, but there's a NASA program that specifically pays for ideas that may seem kind of crazy.
NIAC is all about what do we think about that is science fiction right now that could be possible in the future.
That's Jason Derleff, and he's one of the people at NASA in charge of NIAC, the NASA Innovative Advanced Concepts Program. NIAC spends a little bit of money, very little compared to NASA's budget, and pays for ideas that are too far out for the National Science Foundation or other branches of NASA. In fact, NIAC has an external advisory group that doesn't work for NASA to make sure they are not spending money on things that are too easy.
NIAC is so far out and crazy, and NASA's culture is very risk averse. And so when we started the program up again in 2010, it was thought that having an external counsel would be a good idea because NASA will naturally sort of go towards what's feasible. We didn't want the culture of NASA to slowly change the program over time.
The council also makes sure NIAC doesn't pay for something that is pure science fiction and won't work out. A recent NIAC project that you may have heard of involves using a giant laser to push a tiny spaceship that weighs less than a paperclip so it can go outside our solar system. One of the people on that project is Philip Lubin, a physicist at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
You know, the NIAC program is one of those programs which is like a fuse. You know, they allow you to light a fuse and they provide the match. And in our case, you know, this thing is really sort of mushroomed, and it's grown dramatically based on the NIAC program starting to fund us.
Since the NIAC grant, Russian billionaire philanthropist Yuri Milner set up a $100 million program to build the laser-powered spaceships. The project is now called Breakthrough Starshot. Philip Lubin says his team is working on a prototype laser, but it'll probably take 30 years for the technology to advance and the cost to go down. So the NIAC projects will take some time to develop, but Ariel Wallman, one of the people on the NIAC External Council, says it's a good time to be watching them.
Well, science fiction continues to inform and be provocative towards what can really come in the future of space exploration. I think we're also at a point where science is being provocative in terms of where science fiction should go. And I think that's an exciting time to really be alive.
For The Pulse, I'm Alan Yu.